Hey everybody, it's Cam here. Today I'm going to talk about the Souls Harvest series by M.D. Pressley. The fourth and final book in the series was recently released. The first three books were released years ago, and there was a big break in between book three and book four. I am super big fan of the series, so I was really excited to be able to finish reading it. Right off the bat, I want to say that in this episode, I'm going to talk a little bit more about my own origin story, my own past and history, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about M.D. Pressley and this series and how I got into it and things like that as well. So in the show notes below, I will have timestamps so that if you don't want to hear all that information, you can go right to where the book review starts. As I mentioned, this is going to cover the whole series, basically, but it's going to be spoiler-free. I'll only mention the plot line and things like that of the first book, but we'll talk about the entire world building and the all of the cool things that M.D. Pressley has done with this series. As I've mentioned in previous episodes and repeatedly, I'm sure, in former podcast episodes, I have degrees in both history and theology. Now, I also had a short-lived stint as a social studies teacher about 20 years ago. And to get my certification as a social studies teacher here in the United States, I had to take some extra U.S. history classes that were on top of what I needed for my history degree in college. So I took classes on the American Civil War, I took a class on Reconstruction, and I also took a class on the period before the Civil War. The Souls Harvest series is basically an analog to the American Civil War. It also, the religious system in the series is based on like the Abrahamic religions of, Christianity, Islam, Judaism, where there's a God and there's also a devil. And so both my history degree and my religion degree basically made it so that if this was a series where Matt had sat in front of me and asked me questions on what my interests were and what my, areas of expertise were, and then sat down and wrote a series, I don't think that he could have gotten a series that would have interested me more. So, as I mentioned, the series is an analog to the Civil War in the United States, as well as, the God and the Devil. It is just fascinating to me. The world building that he does is really fascinating as well. One thing with the author, M.D. Pressley, Matt, very early on, because of Mark Lawrence and getting into SPFBO, SPFBO 3, that is when I started reading indie books. And so both Matt and Dirk Ashton, they were the first two authors that I contacted and whose books I read, which is really funny because they ended up being two of my absolute favorite series. I love Paternus and his urban fantasy series for Dirk Ashton, and I love Souls Harvest, and I'm so happy that, I'm finally going to get to talk about it here and that it's finally done. So in my early podcasting days, one of the first author that I interviewed was M.D. Pressley, and later on, he's actually on another episode where we talk about a different series. So I used to talk with Matt quite a bit, and it was fun just getting to talk world building with him. He has some other books that are actually world building books for fantasy authors. And part of the reason why there was that big break between book three and book four was because his world building stuff took off. He's also a screenwriter, so I think all those are a little bit more lucrative to him than doing these fantasy books as an indie author. He's also not very good at self-promotion, I don't think. So it's funny, I think one of the most important parts of being a successful fantasy author, whether you're indie or mainstream now, really is pushing yourself and getting out there. And I think that one of the reasons why Souls Harvest isn't more well-known, clearly I'm starting right off telling you that I absolutely love the series, I love the premise and all of that stuff. So when it gets time to talk about my own thoughts and ratings and things like that, I rated every book in the series a 5 out of 5. The first three I definitely love more because book four gets out of the journey that we're going to talk about more and starts to get like more meta and talks about the bigger picture things while still having the normal storyline. But by the end, I really felt just both excited to finish the series and really sad thinking that it might be the last pages that I read in a series that I've enjoyed so much. Getting into the actual review part, As I've mentioned already, I absolutely loved the entire series, all four books. Today, what I want to do is we'll do the book blurb read of just the first book, and then I'll talk about the plot, the world, all that stuff that will mainly be about book one, but obviously the world building and all that stuff is good for all four books. So I'll read the book blurb real quick of book one, and then I'll talk about everything from there. Here is the book blurb. A fantasy reimagining of the American Civil War. The Woven Ring pits muskets against magic, massive war machines against mind readers, and glass sabers against soldiers and psychic exoskeletons. In exile since the Civil War that tore the nation of Newfield apart, former spy and turncoat Marta Childress wants nothing more than to quietly live out her remaining days in the West. But then her manipulative brother arrives with one final mission. Transport the daughter of a hated inventor deep into the East. Forced to decide between safely delivering the girl and assassinating the inventor, Marta is torn between ensuring the fragile peace and sparking a second civil war. Aided by an untrustworthy Dobra and his mysterious mute companion, Marta soon discovers that dark forces, humans, and perhaps the devil herself, seek to end her quest into the East. That is a shockingly short and to-the-point book blurb for what I'm so used to these days. But the world itself, as mentioned right in the blurb, and as I have said multiple times previously, is basically an analog to the American Civil War. We have two continents. We have the Old Land. It's called the Auld Lands, A-U-L-D, so think of Old World, Europe. And we have a nation called Newfield that is on a southern continent. It is much more like fertile, warmer than northern Auld Lands are. Think kind of more like Russia is what I would imagine as far as like temperate climate. The Auld Lands aren't all that important though. We'll only have a few flashback scenes here and there that actually take place there. Most of the story will take place in the nation of Newfield. It is a continent that goes east to west. The civil war that has taken place is between Newfield. There's a big mountain range. And then on the eastern side of that is another empire called the Minyan. They are, think like Aztecs or the Incas or something like that. Only book four will actually spend any time in that land. The way all four books are put together is there will be flashback scenes that will kind of serve as the world building. Then there will be a current timeline, which takes place 3 years after the end of the Civil War between the two sides of Newfield. So we had the nation of Newfield, and then the part that split off, the eastern part of it, they called themselves the Covenant. It's going to be, I'll break that all that down, why the Civil War happened once I talk more about the plot. But into the world itself, the world building in this series is absolutely amazing. I have not seen anything that exceeds it. There's plenty of books, I'm sure, that are just as good. But as far as a world-building author goes, as I mentioned, M.D. Pressley has actual world-building books, so any of you aspiring authors out there, I would recommend looking at one of those. This is a book, I think, that especially tracing the Civil War as much as it does could have been a danger of being derivative, but instead the author manages to make this its own world. But in a way that, for me, was cool being able to parallel some of the things that happen based on our own American Civil War. So I always had that like thought in the back of my mind of the ways that it did mimic the Civil War, but also all of the differences as well. So this world, it has magic, as mentioned. There's also technology. We're dealing with like late 1800s. Think Civil War of America, the 1860s. There's muskets. They have airships. There are cannons and things like that. But also people are able to use magic. So the origin story that most people follow is that the world of Air was a planet that had no life on it at all. Their deity, whose name Sol, S-O-L, basically sacrificed itself, released trillions of breaths, think little glowing orbs, out into the world in order to give life to things. Plants have one breath in them, so just the body. Animals have two breaths, so they have one in their brain, so mind, and one in body. And humans are above everything else in the world. They have three breaths. So they have one in the mind, one in the body, and one in the soul. And when those breaths, whenever anything dies, those breaths are released and they flow into these giant ley lines, as they're called. In the dark and or at night, those ley lines actually shine, they glow. There are just trillions of breaths in major ley lines that that bisect the entire planet. The Newfield and Aldlands, they build their cities close to those ley lines because of the way they use their magic. There are what are called the NGOs, so think Native Americans. They don't interact with the ley lines much. They actually stay away from it. So even though the nation of Newfield has pushed the NGOs out of a lot of their ancestral lands, there didn't end up being a genocide the same way there is in American history. The NGOs have been pushed out of a lot of their ancestral lands, but there's still plenty of them around. The Meneans on the other side of the mountain range, they use something completely different. So when I talk about the magic here shortly, I'll discuss that exactly. Over time, some humans acquired a fourth breath, and that breath can reside in either the body, the mind, or the soul. And that gives us the different ways that both the Aldlands and the Nation of Newfields use their magic. There are, as I mentioned, three different areas that that fourth breath can be. If it's in the body, then you are called a shaper. And the shapers can basically put an extension of their own will out to create exoskeletons. They can create like weapons from them, swords or armor. They also are able to, lift heavy objects, things like that. If you have an extra breath in your mind, then you are a listener or a whisperer. Listeners and whisperers are not well liked because listeners are able to actually look into your own thoughts and see what you are thinking if you haven't been trained against that. And whisperers are able to actually exert a form of mind control over you. The most powerful ones can do it better, but even like the average whisperer might be able to just make you think that something is a good idea. They have to wear pins on their body announcing who they are so that people know that they're dealing with a whisperer or a listener. There is a clan called the Dobra who are basically like gypsies. They're not well liked either, but they're tolerated because they are way more than the average percentage of the population, which is about 5% blessed. Then up to 80% of Dobra are listeners or whisperers. And so what they're able to do is actually manipulate those ley lines in some way in order to transmit messages. So Dobra will, even though they're not well liked, they'll actually have set up messenger posts, and they basically serve as like the telegraph services. The last of the magical types, they have their extra breath on their soul, their spirit, and they're going to be the basis of all of the divisions as well. They are called either renders or weavers. They are the same thing, but they'll go to different schools and learn how to do different things with it. So renders use glass weapons, and they'll actually able to suck a person's or anything's breath out of their body and use glass to sever that, and it kills someone without bloodshed. Basically just rips their breath away. Weavers, on the other hand, are able to take free breaths, and they create what are called manifestations or just festations, and they will put those breaths in the body and mind, and they can control those things to do to make them do like menial labor, for example. Renders will live in the west, weavers will end up settling in the east, and the east then will be like the south in the American Civil War, where you have those manifestations that are just mindless and they do most of the work. We have an aristocracy that, owns vast tracts of land. In the West, you're going to use more technology and things like that in order to power their industry. The Meneans is the one exception to what we're dealing with otherwise. They have created what is called glassmen. They had to sacrifice their oldest child, and they actually then sucked in their breaths. And once they did that, they are able to accumulate more and more breaths inside their body. I'm not sure what the average glass man is able to take in, but they become superhuman. they are able to, they're able to like run faster, they're stronger, they can rip someone apart with just their hands. They also can use those extra breaths to heal themselves. So if they're wounded, it seems like maybe, you know, they'd be overpowered, except that Renders and Weavers have worked together in the past when they're not fighting each other to draw out the breaths of the Glassmen. And one of the things that Weavers are able to do is actually hold someone in place. So they've been able to work together in the past to kill Glassmen pretty easily by severing all their breaths and holding them in place so that they're not able to kill the Renders and the Weavers before they get to them. Through this, the Nation of Newfields actually managed to take some of the land that the Minians had that were on the western side of the mountain range. And now that mountain range is basically like, you know, their point that they stay at. So now that I've talked about the magic system and the world building, now let's talk a little bit about the religion and how that ended up causing the Civil War. As I've mentioned, there is the god and the devil. The god is completely absent, obviously, having split its body up in order to create life. But the devil has created other things like demons and ghouls. There are also angels, which are basically the same thing as demons, but who fight on the side of humanity. The devil is supposed to influence mankind to do bad things, and it's what causes them to fight. There is a holy scripture called the Bibba Sakara that, you know, mimics the Old Testament of the Abrahamic religions. And the Renders believe, they take a passage from that Bible that says that all breath is supposed to be able to be free so that it can return to the ley line. And the whole theology states that one day, after all of the different combinations of breaths have been in whatever is possible, then soul will return to harvest the people. The good people will go with soul, and the evil will end up being wiped out. So the Renders, what their whole theology is that it is a sin to ever hold one of soul's breaths and to keep it naturally away from those ley lines so that it can eventually recycle and become something different. Whereas the Weavers, they interpret that passage differently. And so they think that it's okay to keep those breaths as long as they eventually are going to be released. So in Newfield on the east, they'll create those manifestations that will stay for long periods of time in order to work. And obviously the Renders don't like that because they think that they should never. One other cool technological way that they use the breaths is that breath can't go through glass for some reason. So they'll actually capture breaths in the evening and in glass globes and actually and light up their cities that way. And then people just release those breaths in the morning. Well, because they're not releasing the breaths on those manifestations regularly, the Renders obviously get really upset. Eventually, one of the real firebrand Renders will go and kill a angel that they don't like very much. And ends up sparking a civil war. Now that I've gotten the world building out of the way with the magic system, the theology, and the politics of things, let's get into talking about how each of the four books is set up. So each book will have one point of view character. We will have a current timeline person and the same person in the past. So it's split up as flashbacks and current timeline. And those flashbacks are kind of how we get all of the real world building and how we, you know, figure out all of that lore. Book one has Marta. Marta Childress is her name. Her family is very important and influential in the East. They are also like the head of a spy network. And Marta was sent to the West as a spy. She was only a teenager when the war started. And she is found out and ends up being thrown in what is called the Pit. It is where shapers were put. She's a very powerful shaper. She can do more than like the average shaper can too, because her like clan network has taught her some special abilities. Much like concentration camps of the American Civil War, where enemy soldiers are put into these basically like big open prisons, lots of people will die in our historical American Civil War from both the North and the South in these, they're basically concentration camps. They're prison camps, but people aren't fed enough. They're not given proper shelter. A lot of people will both starve to death, die of disease, or die from the elements in both our American Civil War and in this one. Marta is just wasting away. She's sure she's going to die in this prison camp called the Pit when she receives a letter. The letter tells her basically that she should be a turncoat, a traitor, as mentioned in the book blurb, and help out with the West. She teaches a bunch of the other shapers in the pit with her. They are end up going under a general, a Western general, who will become the president in our current timeline. And they end up helping the West quite a bit during the war. Right off the bat, that man named Bumgarner, he brands all of them on their forehead with the flag of the nation of Newfield. So they're that way he knows that they're not going to turn traitor against them when they're fighting against their Eastern brethren. Once this war is over, when we start, Marta is, she's like an alcoholic, she's broken emotionally and spiritually, and because of her brand, if she were to set foot in the East, she's almost certainly going to be killed. So she receives this message at the beginning of the book, just like she received one while she was in the pit. The message says she should escort a child to her father. Her father was important. He's the man that basically helped end the Civil War for the West. He managed to create airships. These airships are incredibly destructive. They're powered by breaths, and they ended up basically just destroying the Eastern cities, even though the Eastern Army was about to take over the capital of the West. Or because of this, the Civil War is ended. The letter has an overt message as well as a secret code. The message on one hand tells her that she should take Caddy to her father and help him get to the Covenant Sons, who are trying to start a second civil war. And then the other message is telling her that she needs to assassinate him to stop that second civil war. The whole rest of the plot and story is going to be Marta trying to take first Caddy to her father, and then after that, the storyline continues. I won't get any farther into that because that's going to get into spoiler territory. Book one, as mentioned, is all Marta. It tells her backstory and her current. Book two is going to cover a Dobra, as I mentioned. They're the ones that are gypsies, who is named Luca. He is going to have both his current story and his backstory. And he has a companion. She's not a point of view character, but she's always with him. Her name is Isabel. She's an NGO. She is fiercely loyal to him, even though he hasn't always treated her properly. Then the third book is going to be a character named Graf. He is a render. He's the greatest render that it's ever lived. He's autistic. He is not a likable character for most of the series. He's trying to capture and kill Caddy from the very beginning because he believes that she is a threat to all of existence. And so most of the story for the entire first three is going to be them trying to, the one group trying to escape Graf and his powers as a render. Book four, I'm not going to talk about at all because it would be really spoilery for the first three, but it is like a bigger picture book compared to the first three. This is where most of the time I would give my thoughts. I think I've been pretty clear this entire time that I absolutely love this series. It was a real risk, I think, hewing so closely in some ways to the American Civil War. I think that Matt did such a really good job, though. The changes that Matt made, though, ensure that there's a lot more ambiguity in the Civil War as we're learning the backstory to it, right? The North, in our own Civil War, is fighting to eradicate slavery. So unless you are a racist who thinks that slavery was a positive, then the North is always going to have the moral high ground. You can question some of the tactics, like Sherman's march to Atlanta and the scorched earth tactics, but you can't question whether freeing the slaves was a positive in general society, right? In this case, though, the manifestations don't have a soul. They were never alive. So the renders and the weavers, as their theology basically all hinges on one passage that can be interpreted in different ways within the Bible. Just in the West alone, we've had 2,000 years of war where people have fought over differing beliefs while still being Christian, right? Or still while still being Muslim. We have, you know, the Sunni and the Shia, we have the Catholics and the Protestant. So there's plenty of fighting at all times, but in this case, it's literally over just one line that could easily be interpreted in different ways. So there's a lot of feeling sympathy towards the East versus, you know, not so much, in my case, obviously, feeling sympathy for the American South. I also would like to note, not to get into politics here, but the very first line of the Declaration of Independence for the American South states that they believe that it is their God-given right to own slaves. So anyone that wants to claim that it is just states' rights and not slavery, why don't you go read that Declaration of Independence or any of the writings from the major figures of the South. So slavery was a clear, huge portion of the American Civil War. But in this case, like I said, we're dealing with manifestations that don't have a soul. So is it really that big of a deal that they're being kept, right? Well, obviously it was a big enough deal to start an entire civil war where millions of citizens are going to die, mostly just because of whether they believe that it is okay to hold a breath or not. So that was a thing that from the very beginning was an extra little bit of questioning that I really like to do and that really brought me into the story, whereas and it was one of those essential changes that made the book so intriguing to me. Marta and Luca and Graf, they're all really broken people as well. So there is a lot of ambiguity with the characters. They're, each of the characters, Luca and Marta, both have doubt. Graf has zero doubt at any point, which makes him one of those characters that is unlikable to start off with, especially because he just seems like, you know, a monster, basically. And until you get to his backstory in book three, he's really not a likable character. And I think that it was a great choice to have him as that third point of view character so that we are able to see why he is the way he is. As I mentioned, he's autistic. And obviously that in some ways can make him single-minded at times. But there's more than just his autism to explain why he is the way he is. All in all, I just felt like this book was just so intriguing. It really hit me emotionally in each of the four books. I'm not going to put it up on the Mount Rushmore of feels like I have now with Legacy the Brightwash, but it is a book that that asks the big questions, that uses a lot of nuance, and the world building. I've mentioned repeatedly that I love world building. I'll have a link to MD Pressley's website. On his website, there is a ton more of the world building. Everything's broken down in a spoiler-free way as well. There's glossaries. It talks about each of the major groups. It talks about the different religions. It talks about the nations, all that fun stuff. So if you are like me who loves all that extra world building stuff as well, then I would recommend that. I've also mentioned previously that he has world building books. I have not actually read the world building books. They're not like fantasy books of their own. They are actually, you know, to help you become a better writer. Maybe I should read one of those and see if it helps me write a novel. I'm just excited that I finally was able to read this fourth book recently as well and see the bigger picture. And like I said, it's always a sign of a good series when you are both excited to get to the end and sad that it's over. The fourth book is definitely not a disappointment like some ending books are. It really wraps things up. And it has an end that, while I wouldn't necessarily say it's satisfying, it ends the way that I think it should end. I cannot recommend the entire series enough. I'll have links to all the books below, as well as to MD Pressley's website. I hope to get out at least one more of the Spiffbo 9 finalists, as well as my first Terry Pratchett review. I've never read a Terry Pratchett book before, and I am doing that now. Please like and subscribe to my channel. If you made it all the way to the end of this, I appreciate it. If you have a recommendation for me for one of the giants of fantasy, hit me up with those in the comments and I'll add it on there. My next book after my Terry Pratchett one will be the first book in the Rift War saga. I'm really excited. I read that actually way back when I was about 15 or 16, the first trilogy. And so it's been so long that I do not remember it well. I'm excited to get started. A wonderful day. For my American friends.